This is an ABC podcast. When you're scrolling through your For You page on TikTok and you see something political that comes up in a video, do you know whether it's been paid for by a politician or someone from a particular political group? Hello, Avani Dias here. And on this episode of Hack, we're seeing this increase in political campaigning on TikTok in the lead up to next year's Australian election. So we're going to talk about how this platform could potentially influence the result and draw in young voters. And I've got a proposition for you. If I said all of your uni debt would be erased right now, if you went and worked in the regions for a while, would you do that? There's a shortage of healthcare workers in the bush. So the government introduced this scheme to get more young people out there. Later on the show, will that work? First though, Australia is boycotting the Winter Olympics in China on a diplomatic level. So what does that mean?
Hack. Australia will join a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics in protest over China's alleged human rights abuses.
On Triple J. So the first Olympic Games happened in 1896 in Athens, and the point was to figure out how countries all over the world could learn to understand each other through sport. But it's turned into the opposite of that, a political battle between the US, China, and as of today, Australia. Usually, along with the athletes, government officials, diplomats, politicians, they all head over to the Games. Now, the federal government has said Australia will be staging a diplomatic boycott of the Winter Olympics in Beijing next year because of human rights abuses in China. Text me. Do you support this kind of boycott? Or is this just the government trying to get political points? I want to know your thoughts. 0439 757 555. Text me. Soon we're going to talk to the first individual Australian medalist at the Winter Olympics, Sally Steggall. She's now an independent MP. First, though, here's Shalala Madura explaining what's going on.
Australia's a great sporting nation, and I very much separate the issues of sport and these other political issues. They're issues between two governments, and I would like to see those issues resolved, but they are not resolved.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison has faced pressure for a couple of days to impose a so-called diplomatic boycott on February's Winter Olympics to be held in Beijing in China.
It is not surprising, therefore, that Australian government officials would therefore not be going to China for those games. Australian athletes will, though.
The idea is that Australia won't send officials or diplomats or pollies to the games because of human rights abuses committed against China's mostly Muslim minority people, the Uyghurs. It's not a full boycott. That would be if we didn't send athletes or their support staff. Labor supports the diplomatic boycott.
It's entirely up to the government and not a matter for us, as we are politically neutral, and it's about the athletes and the team for the AOC.
Head of the Australian Olympic Committee, Matt Carroll, was asked if the decision has made any athletes think twice about going.
No athlete has expressed any concern or to boycott. In fact, some of the athletes are already over and have been to Beijing or been to the venues.
He said sports people were entitled to express their views, but urged them to think about how that would be received.
Athletes, of course, are entitled to their own opinions. We do advise them to take care because they want to be focused on competition.
Australia is now the second country after the United States to impose a diplomatic boycott.
US diplomatic or official representation would treat these games as business as usual, and we simply can't do that.
Here's White House spokesperson Jen Psaki making the announcement earlier this week.
The athletes on Team USA have our full support. We will be behind them 100% as we cheer them on from home. We will not be contributing to the fanfare of the games.
China was pretty pissed by the decision, with officials warning of repercussions.
The US is shooting itself in the foot. The US should recognise the consequences of these mistakes.
This is significant. It's coming at a time when China is rising. China is looking to make a statement about its prestige on the global stage.
Professor Caitlin Byrne is an expert in sports diplomacy from the Griffith Asia Institute. What sports diplomacy, you ask?
sport as a vehicle for sending political messages, but also advancing non-sport outcomes, so outcomes that have an impact on foreign or economic policy.
Professor Byrne says while the world has known about atrocities committed against the Uyghur people for ages, the timing of the boycott is important.
Particularly over the last couple of years, a sharpening of the tension between the United States and China. And we've seen some big changes in China as well, particularly around the consolidation of power.
And Australia does have to be aware of how siding with the US will affect our relationship with China.
China has been a really important trading partner and continues to be an important trading partner for Australia. We do have to be prepared for the fact, and China has come out and said there will be repercussions for states that take this official stand against the Beijing Winter Olympics. So we may see that come into the trade space, as we've seen previously.
And look, this could all just be a way of getting attention. Because at the end of the day, COVID would have made sending officials and police to China really difficult anyway. This way, the Australian government gets to make a political point without pissing off its sports-loving voters.
It is actually pretty important for athletes to have the opportunity to engage and compete and continue their journeys.
Hack on Triple J.
Shalala Medora with that story. Lots of thoughts on the text line on this. Molly in Melbourne, I think that if we're going to diplomatically boycott these Olympics, we should be boycotting them fully. It's a half-loss boycott where we lose nothing and also gain nothing. It's a gesture, that's it. Chris in Sydney's got a point that a few people are talking about on the text line. He says the government can't act as if they're innocent. Our Indigenous people and asylum seekers are treated terribly, but as soon as the government can point the finger and make themselves look like the martyr, they seem to forget. Text me your thoughts, 0439757555. Do you support this diplomatic boycott of the China Winter Olympic Games? Let's talk to Zali Stegall now. She won Australia's first Winter Olympics medal and has set a bunch of other records at the Games. She's also an independent federal MP for Warringah in Sydney. Thanks so much for joining us on Hack.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So you were competing in the Winter Olympics from 92 to 2002. How would you have felt if this kind of diplomatic boycott was happening when you were competing?
Yeah, look, I went to my first Olympics when I was 17, so I'd have to admit that I probably wasn't hugely aware of who was there from the Australian government. I was pretty focused on, you know, the excitement of being at the Games and everything like that. But there's no doubt that all the noise on the periphery does impact athletes, and it does impact their performance, because you're really trying to focus on just the event, what you're doing. You know, this is a culmination of lifelong training and it's a dream. So, you know, it's important that athletes are able to stay focused on what they're there to do, but that's generally the job of the coaches and the AOC.
Do you support this kind of diplomatic boycott of China?
Look, I've been suggesting for some time, there's been calls for athlete boycotts, and I can see your messages refer to that as well. And I'm strongly opposed to that, because I think that's putting athletes in the middle and really using them as pawns. So I've strongly opposed any calls for athlete boycotts, but I definitely think we needed to consider a diplomatic boycott, because Olympic Games is a moment of national pride. You know, it's a nationalism moment where you show off your country to the world. And so the lack of audience, the fact that, you know, diplomatically you don't have the big players turning up, that will send a message. I think it will possibly have some consequences as well. But I hope this finds the right sort of middle. But we obviously still need to find ways to communicate.
Yeah, isn't the spirit of the Olympic Games to keep those communications open, to have this sort of sporting field, this equal playing field where issues like politics can be put aside and then potentially discussed in a more, I guess, calm atmosphere? Is it going against the spirit of the Olympics?
Look, I don't disagree with you there, because I actually attended the 2018 Pyeongchang Olympic Games in South Korea, and we saw there the opportunity for some discussions between North and South Korea. We saw a joint hockey team being fielded, the cheerleaders from both sides, and some family reunification. So yes, in those circumstances, the Olympics allowed for improving of relations. So I do think it is the goal of the Olympics to be able to be a international diplomatic arena where we focus on goodwill and opening borders rather than shutting down conversations.
Sally Stegall, I'm keen to get your thoughts on this text, which is quite similar to a few other points we're getting at the moment. Someone says, I'm all for boycotting countries which have human rights abuses, but in that case, we should be boycotting white countries like America as well. Is this a bit of a double standard, considering that we've been to plenty of countries for Olympic Games which may have committed various different atrocities or crimes over the years?
Look, I don't disagree with the sentiment of that text. The problem is, at the moment, what we're seeing occur, what's occurring in China to the Uyghur people is, you know, we're talking genocide. So that is of a whole, you know, a huge, the level of seriousness it really is higher. But of course, no one comes to the discussion of human rights with clean hands, and I think it's, you know, it can be seen as hypocritical if one is always critical of other nations' records but unwilling to look at our own records. So I agree with the sentiment that human rights is not something you can pick and choose. If you're going to stand up for human rights, then it should be all human rights, and you have to look at our own record. You know, we have indefinite detention of refugees going on 8-9 years. So I think we need to address those issues as well.
There, obviously, the timing is really interesting of this, right? You know, Australia went to the Summer Olympics in Beijing a few years ago and there was no boycott then. But what we've been seeing is this escalation of tension between Australia and China and several other countries around the world. There's been trade disputes that's affected farmers in Australia because China is such a big trading partner. Is the Australian government thinking enough about the everyday people who will be affected, considering China's trade with us is a really big economic deal?
Yeah, and look, when there was the cause of the athletes boycott, I was, you know, pointing out that we're happy to continue trading with China. You know, it's a major trading partner. So I think we need to be clear, if we're not, you know, if we have issues with our dealings with China, then it should be across the board of all our dealings, not just pick and choose which ones you want to take issue with. So, but there's no doubt this decision from the government will have consequences from a trade point of view. We've seen sort of retaliation kind of action occur in the past. I think the minister and the government have acknowledged it may well happen again. And I think that is concerning because at the end of the day, they are an important trading partner. A lot of businesses and areas of our economy rely heavily on our trade with China. And so we need to find common ground rather than a breakdown of communication.
A lot of text on this. Someone says, I'm in total agreement with the government's choice to not go to China. Someone else, I'm all for boycotting countries, but we need to look at home. Yeah, similar points like that coming through a lot. Sean from Bendigo says, never thought I'd see the Liberal National Government blatantly using performative activism, but here we are. Sally Stegall, before we let you go on another issue, we've been talking this week about the former New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, potentially running in your seat of Warringah, which you won from Tony Abbott in the last election. In the last few hours, as the ABC has been reporting, that Gladys Berejiklian probably won't be running. How are you feeling about that?
Look, yes, it has raised a lot of speculation this week. I think, I think we should be focusing probably more on the words the Prime Minister used in trying to, you know, diminish the important role of New South Wales ICAC. I think integrity is really important in good governance. We need to have strong anti-corruption bodies, especially at federal level, and that is something the Prime Minister has failed to deliver, and he is opposing, you know, a strong model. So I really view a little bit of this push by him around who will be the Liberal candidate at the next election linked into undermining the role of anti-corruption and integrity bodies.
But it is a seat that the Liberal government does want to win back in the next election. It's obviously considering very carefully and thought Gladys Berejiklian was very popular. Are you sort of relieved in that sense that she may not be running?
Well, look, I guess I can give you the Olympic analogy since it's apt for our conversation. As an athlete, you don't worry about who the competition is. You don't worry about what you can't control. You worry about what you can control. So that is how I approach it. I know I've worked hard for the electorate and I know the issues that the electorate cares about. And ultimately, I would like to shy away from personality politics and focus on the issues. And it doesn't matter who the Liberal candidate is, they still have to sell the policies, and that they are lacking when it comes to integrity and treatment of women and climate.
All right, Zali Steggall, appreciate you coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Zali Steggall is the independent MP for Warringah, and she's also a former Winter Olympian.
Hack, did you smoke weed at high school? This is your chance to win over a few, you know, your people.
I'm not going to answer any of that.
On Triple J.
All right, you are listening to Hack. I'm Avani Dias, and yeah, let's keep talking about that federal election. It is going to happen next year. Some experts are saying potentially even as early as March, and the parties are trying to target you as a young voter through social media. Pretty classic. But TikTok is this new battleground we're seeing in the lead up to next year. It could actually influence the result, according to some analysts. Political content is blowing up on there. Leaders from all backgrounds are taking it really seriously. But what if these TikToks were paid for by the political parties themselves? Call me. Have you been asked to make political content and get paid for it on TikTok? Or have you seen this kind of TikTok content? 1300 055 536. Call me. Here's Meghna Bali.
On this side of the house, support university education. We support TAFE. We support schools.
What you're hearing right now is opposition leader Anthony Albanese getting into the PM during question time in Parliament.
They said, we're not going to give you the best start in life, and we'll keep you down later on in life as well.
The clip's from a TikTok account called Gen Z for Albo. It's got hundreds of posts like this, praising different Labor politicians and criticising Scott Morrison.
Have you ever looked at someone you work with and thought, how the f*** did you get this job?
Sort of started at the beginning of this year. I was sitting around having coffee with my friends, and we were sort of talking about how young people don't really have a reliable source of information that is sort of in their language.
This is Lachlan. He's a 21-year-old uni student from Brisbane and the guy behind this hugely popular account.
All of my friends have stopped using Facebook, and people younger than me, they think Facebook is for boomers. People don't really use Instagram as much.
The page has racked up close to 45,000 followers, and some of them aren't even old enough to vote. But Lachlan says they're switching on more than ever.
Some people, they genuinely don't know a thing about politics, but because we presented something in a way that they could understand, they can actually understand that. They're getting the point that we're trying to make, and then they're able to explain that to their friends and their circle.
A typical post on the account includes adapting trending sounds to anti-Liberal Party commentary.
Scott Morrison and the LNP just don't back women at work.
Or sharing relatable clips of Anthony Albanese.
Did you smoke weed at high school? This is your chance to win over a few, you know, your people.
I'm not going to answer any of that.
Lachlan tells me he's never been paid or coached to create these posts. But there have been instances of people trying to buy influence on the app.
I was sent an email from a US-based influencer marketing agency offering me $300 to make a TikTok about Scott Morrison, specifically a negative one.
This is Cam Wilson. He's an internet culture reporter for Crikey and a TikToker. Cam tells me he was initially sus on the email, and he tried to verify whether it was legit.
But I was able to verify it through a variety of ways, including confirming the agency, confirming the person who worked for it. And the brief that they attached to the email did actually have quite a lot of information that was consistent with Australian Labor Party marketing and communications.
The campaign brief suggests that creators should use trending sounds and filters and paint the PM as someone who, quote, isn't quick to care and instead waits until it gets really bad to do his job.
Users on social media platforms like TikTok do actually have an incredible power to shape narratives, which really does influence politics.
Cam says it makes sense that the pollies are starting to take TikTok seriously, but he thinks the lack of transparency is a real issue.
The email that I got didn't say anything about authorization, which is something that you have to do if you do a political advertisement.
A spokesman for Federal Labor told me they weren't the ones behind the marketing push. Victorian Labor didn't respond to my questions. A spokesperson from the Prime Minister's office did get back to me.
Yet another grubby tactic from a Labor Party that is all insults and no ideas.
Lachlan reckons politicians and parties need to be upfront about paying for campaign content on socials.
You should always know when you're if you're watching an ad, because it does change the viewing experience. I don't know about you, but I'm always uncomfortable watching brand content on TikTok because I know that it's not a genuine interaction.
So can a meme on TikTok actually affect how young Aussies vote? Professor Dan Angus from the Queensland University of Technology's Digital Media Research Centre says it's hard to gauge, but there are some things we know.
Repeated exposure effects are real. So, you know, even for people who might think of themselves as pretty savvy and able to cut through, you know, particular dodgy messaging, you repeat a lie enough times and people start believing it.
Cam Wilson reckons that TikTok's going to be a pretty major factor in how political parties are perceived at next year's federal election.
It's unlikely one TikTok video is going to convince someone to vote for or against the government, but it is part of a multi-pronged process from these political parties who are trying to reach you in all kinds of ways to try and make you vote for them.
Hack on Triple J.
Megan Barley with that story. And yeah, someone's texted something interesting. I think the marketing on TikTok is really smart and creates more political conversations. However, I do believe it needs to be made aware of when these advertisements are paid for. Text me, have you seen political ads or political campaigning on TikTok from an Australian perspective? Maybe you've been asked, yeah, to do some of these campaigns as a TikTok creator. 0439 757 555. Text me. Let's talk to Andrew Hughes, who researches political advertising at ANU. Thanks for coming on the show. How effective are these political ads or even political campaign videos on TikTok in influencing how we vote?
Well, that's the thing. If they come from an influencer and you can't detect that they're being made as a paid political advertising by a party somewhere, then they're very effective because all of a sudden you're going, hang on, I'm not watching a message anymore from a political party. It's from someone you like. And that likability adds to the credibility of the message, which means you're more likely to pay attention all the way through the message itself. And, of course, share it around. And that's even better because then you become like a resender of that content. You become another source of credibility of that message as well, and it adds to the power of the message. So it can be quite influential at times.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of the rules around this, that's what's murky, right? Because technically you should be fined if you don't declare that something's a political ad, but parties really know how to get around it on social media. So if they're not declaring on TikTok that it is paid for by a political party, what are the sort of legalities there?
Yeah, so at the moment in Australia, the law, the way it works is anything which is an ad on social media, you're meant to declare it by saying it's an ad as a hashtag. You can use a hashtag and go hashtag ad. And that way people know it's an ad. But the thing is, how do you find that out? The ACCC are meant to enforce this, but they don't really do it. There hasn't been a lot of cases in Australia yet on where they've caught people doing that sort of thing. And this is why it's gone unchecked for a long time, because who enforces it? Who's got to do something about it? And so for political parties, it's brilliant because it's so obscured. It's so hard to find who's paying for it. And they can use third-party sources as well. So they can outsource the payment to an agency. The agency does the work, as we just heard in that report. And then it's the agency technically making the payment, not the political organisation. Isn't that amazing? And so therefore dodgy. They get around the law.
Yeah, totally. Isn't it just? In terms of, obviously, social media is already a big sort of battleground in terms of campaigning in the lead up to the election. And to be honest, conservative, really far-right conservative politicians are doing really well on social media, getting lots of hits on Facebook and TikTok and so on. And we know the major parties are jumping on board as well. What are the effects going to be of the murkiness of those legalities on us as voters when it's really hard to detect whether these are paid ads?
So this is the thing. How do you know what's a lie and what isn't? Because if it comes from an influencer, it's going to be very hard for you to detect unless you know enough about the policies and the issues at heart, whether you're being told a lie or being told the truth. And so with this sort of content, we see a lot of it during the election campaign, and it'll look so natural. It'll look so professional. It'll look even like it's made in someone's home or on the move or by someone who hasn't got any links at all to a political organisation. And this came on the back of trends we saw out of the US elections in 2016 and 2020, where the Russians were very good at being able to manipulate the outcome of elections by, you know, using formats and content which looked very, very natural and very authentic, which is what the US identified in one of their reports. But also what we're seeing now is, forget the foreign influence here, let's move on to how domestic parties themselves use the same tools you're used to and therefore blends in. And so you watch it, you listen to it, and as I think that expert from QUT said really well, it's the repetitive effect. If you watch it enough times, even from different sources, the message sinks in. And the question you have to ask yourself is, why is someone telling you this in the first place? Is this the truth, or is this something you need to hear? And maybe go off and maybe change your algorithm if you can. Look for sources of information outside just one social media feed to make sure you're getting the full story, i.e. listen to Triple J Hack more often.
Very good advice there. Just listen to Hack all the time. That should be a sole source of information. Dr. Andrew Hughes from ANU, thanks so much for the free
My pleasure.
But also for coming on the show. And yeah, some really good advice there, because obviously we're going to get bombarded with these kinds of posts and this kind of campaigning in the next few months in the lead up to the election next year. So definitely a point to be critical of.
Hack. Rural areas have up to 50% fewer health providers than in major cities. And the more remote you go, the worse it really gets.
On Triple J.
All right, would you move to the bush to work if it meant all of your uni debt was wiped? From next year, the federal government will do that for medical professionals, so doctors and nurses. And the point is to get more of them to rural and regional Australia. You've got to work at least 24 hours a week in one of those places to be eligible for half the length of your degree. I want to know your thoughts. Call in. Are you a health worker? How do you feel about this scheme? 1300 055 36. Let's talk to Kate, who's a junior doctor in Albury. Firstly, Kate, what do you think of the massive hex debt that you've built up? Because medical degrees are among the most expensive in the country. They take years to finish up, right?
Yes, it's very intimidating when I log on and have a look at it and it's staring at me. It's a huge debt that I feel like will be following me for a while at the moment. So I guess like hearing this news, is really exciting. And I think like I'm somebody who will probably be able to benefit from it, but it's not changing whether I would be working in rural or regional areas. I was going to come here anyway. So like it's great news for me, and I think it has the potential to be quite a good scheme, but I think it doesn't take into account a lot of the other problems with rural workforce retention, particularly for junior doctors.
And in terms of that workforce retention, what are your concerns there about why that would be affected and may not actually be fixed by waiving uni debts?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest problems is training pathways into specialist training programs at the moment. You know, everybody is obviously keen to have their help debt wiped or, you know, relieved, but, you know, if your dream is to become a surgeon, then your dream is to become a surgeon. If you have to move away to do that, move back to the city potentially, then I don't think these incentives will, you know, really help. And I think the time frames that they're sort of asking people to do, I think the longer people stay in regional areas, the more likely they are to stay there. But doing, you know, potentially 4 or 5 years return of service in a regional area as a junior doctor might not be feasible if you do need to get back, you know, to a city to do some of your training pathways when you're still, you know, only a couple of years out of uni. So I think it doesn't take into consideration some of the other practical problems.
That is Kate, who is a junior doctor. Thanks so much for chatting to us about that, Kate. Let's go to Dr. Dan Wilson now, who's from the Rural Doctors Association. Thanks for your time. What do you think of this move by the federal government wiping hex debts to get people to move to the country?
Thanks, Avani. I think that the scheme is a really welcomed incentive to act as an opportunity in conjunction with other schemes to recruit and retain junior doctors and also nurse practitioners to fulfil the workforce need in rural and remote Australia. So the Rural Doctors Association really welcomes this initiative.
Is a hex debt, though, the thing that's stopping people moving regionally? Because we know that there have been lots of incentives in the past to get medical professionals to the country. So is this actually going to work?
I think this is a package to combine with other work. I absolutely agree with Kate that there needs to be a combined effort from not only government but professional bodies working collaboratively to recruit and retain professionals and their families, because there are a lot of personal and professional barriers that might impede a young doctor from moving to and staying in the country. So is the HECS debt the sole barrier? No, but I really think that this is an opportunity to not only reward medical professionals that are already working in those regions, but eliminating or slashing your HECS debt altogether could be a really nice incentive for some.
Before we let you go, you know, we've reported on the difficulties for junior doctors, for junior nurses, especially coming out of COVID when they've been working so, so hard for all Australians. Are there a lot of larger issues that are adding to this reluctance to move somewhere potentially isolating for a lot of young people?
I think it's related to the fact that the world is globalising and that individuals and families choose to live or be close to metropolitan areas. And that's a cultural move that is across all professions. I definitely agree that the medical profession and other healthcare professionals are exhausted. And I think that level of exhaustion is a barrier for anyone that has an interest to go rural. They just might not have the energy to do it right now in the middle of COVID. So there's a lot of factors at play.
All right, Dr. Dan Wilson from the Rural Doctors Association. Appreciate you chatting to us about that. Andy in Gippsland says, I've worked in regional Victoria, New South Wales and WA over the last 8 years since finishing uni and love it. Please backdate and erase my debt. And a few people saying, yeah, what about my industry? Why not teachers, says one person. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Hack. Don't forget, you can always subscribe to our podcast on the Triple J app, on Spotify or wherever you listen. I'll catch you next time.